The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On last week's show, we had part one of my conversation with the writer, activist, and regional normal organizer, Chris Goldstein. This week, yes, you guessed right, we hear part two. Earth Day. You were talking to me about this, or about Earth Day. You celebrate. I keep thinking you're in Philly, but Philly is, after all, the gateway to New Jersey, and you are there, over there in New Jersey. Tell me about Earth Day.
Earth Day. You know, we wanted to bring it back to the roots. We're still fighting for home cultivation here in New Jersey. In the Garden State, you can't garden, and it is so weird because around us in the last few years, Ohio and Maryland and New York also legalized marijuana and allowed home cultivation. And of course, Washington, D.C. has allowed it for over a decade. So we are really confused as to why we can't cultivate in New Jersey. And really, we have just a couple of stubborn politicians standing in our way. We do have bills, active legislation every year with bipartisan co-sponsorship. And quite frankly, we have a bill in the Senate now, I believe, with we're approaching a majority of senators as co-sponsors on the bill, if you can believe that. So it's not like we don't have political support for the issue, but we have a couple stubborn politicians standing in our way. And when things get stubborn and politics get absurd, you have to do some creative and sometimes humorous activism. So we went out and planted some live cannabis plants into the front of the New Jersey State House. We didn't really scratch up the property in any. I think we're doing beautification, really. I mean, the whole place is under construction anyway, honestly. They have scaffolding up and equipment everywhere. So we went in and, boy, we planted a few plants. We demonstrated what a 10 by 10 garden might look like. So there were a few plants that were maybe 4 or 5 feet tall. And then there were a number of clones just to show what pheno hunting and all that might be like. And so we got all this done, and there were some state police observing us. And at the end, we had the garden all set up with a nice little rope around it, took some pictures, and everything was going well. Some media showed up. And then the first round of police asked us if we had a permit, which we did not. And asked us who was organizing it. And we're just like, well, this is kind of like a loose Earth Day party, you know? And they're like, well, what are you guys doing? We're like, well, I mean, we can leave them right here, or you guys can take them home. Feel free. And they're like, I tried to give them away. There's an ongoing fight in New Jersey. Technically, the police are allowed to consume cannabis off duty now that it's legal. But a couple of cities have tried to prevent their cops, Jersey City being one of them, which is bizarre. The mayor of Jersey City is running for the governor, and he's famously pro-marijuana. He was involved with, his family was involved with trying to start a dispensary, but he doesn't want the cops to smoke weed off duty. Totally weird. And so now the Jersey City cops and the mayor are in this fight over smoking weed off duty. I think it's great because the police were our worst opposition for years. And now that it's legal, they're fighting for the right to party. So I'm totally down with how this all turned out. The police, we tried to give the clones to the police on Earth Day. They declined taking them home. They also did not want to arrest us for them, which they could. I mean, understand that the amount of plants that we had out there would constitute a felony here in New Jersey very easily. In fact, just two plants constitutes a felony here in New Jersey, Doug. That's the scary part. So, and in New Jersey, the idea that this is esoteric, we got away with our clowning around with the marijuana the other day at the State House. But the truth is that police and county prosecutors still arrest and prosecute people for less than 20 plants. And they throw ancillary charges like a first degree felony called operating and maintaining a controlled dangerous substance manufacturing facility, which comes with a 10-year mandatory minimum if you are convicted. So when they charge you with that, most people take a plea. And at that point, that's game over. So we have a real problem with this. And again, when the state legislators have put it in it. And let me put it this way. The opposition that we have to home grow is very clear. The state Senate president has said that the industry needs to get off the ground. We're talking about TerrAscend, Curaleaf, Ascend, Verano, Trulieve. These are national companies with millions and millions of dollars. They are well established. A couple of people growing plants at home in New Jersey is not going to threaten their business model. So the idea, but really watching one politician protect such large corporations sends that message down to the police to keep prosecuting and arresting people. They've equated anybody growing at home with being in illegal marijuana operation for years, and they haven't stopped here. So, you know, people think that legalization is done. I have to say my perspective in the last few weeks, going to the White House, going to Congress, planting seeds at the New Jersey State House, I'm telling you, we're not done. Not even close.
It's madness. It's that thing. It's like, you know, you can grow plants. You can grow plants with a light, with some dirt. You can grow plants in a closet in your bedroom. So now the police have to regulate everything that's happening inside your bedroom. Well, we know that's just not.
And Earth Day, too, I think, you know, we need to get back to this idea of sustainability. Like the cannabis industry of today is full of plastic bottles and 1/8-ounce servings and vape pen cartridges and batteries. Look, I think that Earth Day was the perfect day to talk about what should be a much more sustainable industry. And that starts with accessing people in the plants. Like when I first encountered legal marijuana in California under the 1990s medical marijuana rules, all the dispensaries had a little section with clones. They had like a little garden store next to the weed store. It was in the same place. And I think even the idea that you would see them side by side, that changed the whole concept for the patient and the consumer. So I would love to get back to that. I can't believe that we got so far away from that concept of corporate cannabis cartels that we have today. It's rough. That's what I call it here, by the way. I call them the corporate cannabis cartel because that is how they operate. They price fix, they price gouge, they operate like a unrestricted corporate cartel because they play the boundary between federal and state law and do things that most corporations can't, because they're regulated by both.
This is my conversation with the writer, activist, and regional normal organizer, Chris Goldstein. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Back when I worked at the dispensaries down in California and then up here in Oregon, that was, we very much, if we could get a good supply of clones, I mean, people, you know, it wasn't always easy to get good clones. People, you know, it's a skill. It's a skill to get somebody who's good at producing. I mean, we'd have them sitting there, and they're pretty, and they're nice, and people would pick them up. But for the most part, people look at them. Oh, those are pretty. That's what those plants look like when they're little, huh? Well, that's nice. So let me get an eighth. Let me get a half. They're not, you know, I don't garden. I don't have space. What am I going to do? Put it, you know. Of course, I was telling you before, the original Oregon Marijuana Initiative, we ballot measure 5 in the 1986 general election, that one was set up to forbid permits and regulations and all the rest. It was literally only there had been no commerce allowed under the original measure 5. It was just adults could legally possess and use and cultivate weed within, you know, in private for themselves. Well, in private, we didn't put a limit on the number of plants. We didn't put a limit in terms of the dry weight or the wet weight. We defined adult as over the age of 18. We didn't really define private so much, which, in our defense, all this would have been taken care of by the legislature, because the Oregon legislature has the ability to amend these initiatives after they're voted on, before they're actually put into effect, which is why Measure 110 was amended, which is why Measure 91, the legalized weed, was amended, the medical one was, I mean, that's just how they do it, right? But yeah, I mean, we got 26% of the vote that year. That was, we got shellacked, I'll be blunt. I mean, the only one that got worse that year was the sales tax measure. That only got 25%. At least we beat out sales tax. Weed was more popular than a sales tax. And now we have legal weed and we have a sales tax on it. It's one of the only things in the state of Oregon that has a sales tax. There's a sort of a technical thing with hotel or with cell phone minutes from years ago when people bought, remember when people bought cell phone minutes? And now, but that's our one sales tax. But we did that so that, because originally they wanted to have an excise tax at the producer level, right? So you put a little, just a little tax at the producer level, right? And then the next person, they double that because you don't put it into a separate category and just keep that special. That's just the cost of goods. So you double the cost of your goods and that's how much you charge. And if how many steps along the way that $25 or $50 thing per whatever turns into a few hundred bucks, and suddenly you're talking about real money, and suddenly you're having prices like, well, like they seem to be having out in, we were talking about the prices out in, out on, out, you're out on the East Coast, and how much are they charging?
Oh no. Oh man, it's so bad, Doug. So in New Jersey, I do a thing where I do a survey. There are roughly 130 dispensaries open in New Jersey. And some of them, you know, some of the corporate brands have two or three open. So there's a list of about 108 individual branded dispensaries open. Most of these are not vertical operations. They can only resell other corporate brands, really, on the shelf. I go through and I do what's called my cheap weed list. It is the lowest priced flower available at any of the dispensaries. That's what I do. I go to each one and I crawl the menus and I find the lowest price, right? And they're selling shake here for $10 a gram. You can't get it for cheaper than $70 a quarter for floor trim, Doug, floor trim. All right. That's New Jersey pricing. The lowest price ounce that you can usually find is actually, to their credit, there is a new vertical small business operator doing sun-grown New Jersey outdoor weed. And it's woman-run. It's called Brutes Roots. There are some other small ones coming online. They're coming on about $180 to $200 an ounce. But still, that's fair. That's what I would call fair and affordable. But that's not a screaming deal either. We were talking about my experience in Maine, where you go up to Maine and you get a $75 ounce, and it is really nice flower. I mean, for real. So New Jersey is experiencing price gouging on a major scale, because we have one of the most limited and corporate controlled markets. What is weird is that those same large corporations operate in Pennsylvania. So right across the river, there's now Pennsylvania has, we built into the law there something called a price cap provision. They've never deployed it, but it's always been there as a threat. And a previous administrator there, the director of the medical marijuana program, kind of threatened them with price caps, okay? So that has kept the price in Pennsylvania low. Right now, an eighth from one of the corporate brands is about $15 in Pennsylvania, but it's $45 or $50 an eighth in New Jersey from the same brand right across the river. So we do have a price cap bill now in New Jersey for medical marijuana. This would allow our New Jersey regulators to impose price caps, not on the whole market, but on individual operators, and say, we noticed that you're charging more in New Jersey than Pennsylvania or any other state that you operate in. So we're going to cap it off at a nearby state level. That is potentially how it could be used. The other problem is that, like I said, there are a lot of independently owned dispensaries, and the only wholesale they have available is from large corporations. And that brings up an concept of price fixing. So if they fix the wholesale high, then you can't get it any cheaper anywhere else. I've told people that the experience is sort of like walking up to a local food truck expecting to get a local flavor and instead being offered a McDonald's hamburger in the McDonald's wrapper for $75. And that doesn't feel very good. And having the small business owner expect you to buy the $75 McDonald's hamburger and just to support their business, just as like a donation. I'm not going to smoke corporate weed and donate to your business. If you want me to do that, start a Kickstarter. I might donate to that, but I am not going to smoke the corporate weed just to donate to your business. I'm sorry. That's not a good model. So That is essentially what's happened here in New Jersey. They expect consumers like me or working class people who make $15 an hour to pay $60 an eighth plus tax for McDonald's hamburgers to one day maybe get some craft cannabis grown by locals. That's the model. So the prices are out of control here in New Jersey. Now, here's the weird dynamic, Doug. Members of Congress have an eloquent and active national conversation about big corporations price gouging working class Americans on milk and bread and eggs and gasoline and all kinds of products. What I think politicians don't realize is that price gouging is happening to American consumers in the worst, some of the worst ways in the marijuana and cannabis space. So once politicians realize that, and that's why things like safe banking aren't going anywhere. Again, like, you know, we didn't really touch on the federal bills, but, you know, CAOA is there are so many things in that bill that are good. I would love to get rid of my federal record. But the idea of having the FDA and the ATF in charge of national cannabis policy, you could just see people run the other direction as soon as you mention those two agencies' names. The safe banking bill, which comes up every year as a rider. It's not even a bill. They're not even going to vote on it. It's a rider. They're trying to attach it to a cryptocurrency FAA funding act right now. Give me a break. Last year, they tried to attach it to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. Look, safe banking is, and the fact that they keep trying and failing on that bill for good reasons, honestly, is making Congress look like they are a partner to the worst in corporate cannabis, like they're trying to lay out the welcome mat to those guys first. And I know that might be unintentional, but that is the message that I think people are getting. Safe banking is something that won't really help small businesses because there's nothing in the bill that would compel banks to work with them. It would just give a blessing to the existing financial relationships that the largest corporations have with the biggest banks. For example, you couldn't get an operating permit in Pennsylvania unless you demonstrated that you had liquid capital to the Pennsylvania Health Department in a bank in Pennsylvania. So, and when I mean liquid capital, I don't mean $100. I mean like millions. So, the idea that the industry doesn't have banking is totally false. They have uncomfortably expensive banking and they don't have the blessing that they want, but they have banking. Now, the idea that it would solve the payroll stuff with employees or even solve the concept of taking credit cards at the terminals, that is not in the safe banking bill. I want to make sure that that's clear. The bills that are out there with regards to banking right now, again, I think that they're a distraction as much as schedule. Here are the biggest distractions in Congress right now. Schedule 3, ha, 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 never going to happen. 280E, oh my gosh. I was just having a ketamine smoothie with a little Kraft codeine at my anabolic steroid cafe, thinking about how awesome the over-the-counter Schedule 3 regulated state businesses are for drugs. And I thought about all the awesome 280E tax benefits my ketamine smoothie place gets. Doesn't happen. Not going to happen for state regulated marijuana businesses either, unless there's a more major shift than that. I think that selling these things as a promise to people, especially when Schedule 3 is such an outside possibility anyway, is really a distraction. I think safe banking is a distraction. Schedule 3 is a distraction. 280E tax benefits are a distraction. This is all things that speak to a very small section of business interests. And right now, the biggest problem I see is that the business person's perspective of cannabis and legalization and policy are extremely well represented in the press and politics, extremely well documented and explored. What is missing is the consumer perspective. We're the engine of this economy. Every bit of profits that a drug dealer makes or a regulated weed dealer makes comes right out of my pocket. That you can't extract money from plants. You can't grow the cash on the trees. It has to come from working class people. We're the ones who pay for all of it. So
unless the voices of working class consumers get considered more, unless our vision of what we want in the products, in the policy starts to come across, this experiment will continue to stumble, and expensively so. So, and I don't want to see that happen. So, you know, I'm in this to win it. I think that we've won so much. The stop to arrest, there were 100 people getting arrested a day in New Jersey for possession, Doug. And we stopped that. And not only is the sky not fallen, it seems a heck of a lot bluer every day. So I like that. We've done some good stuff. And the idea that we can create equity in an already corrupt environment, that cannabis can somehow be the shining Jedi Knight in the world of the dark side. Come on. I think that we need to start taking things into context for sure. There are things that we can do a heck of a lot better, but the idea that we can do everything with marijuana is a hilarious prospect.
This is my conversation with the writer, activist, and regional normal organizer, Chris Goldstein. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Oh, and just to, I'll add one more bit, which was the amount, $86 for a half ounce of, it was on the high end of mid. It wasn't the most expensive, but it sure wasn't the cheapest stuff that they had on the shelf. And that $86, that was discounted, but that included the tax. And included the sales tax, which is, you know, 20% right now. It's 13 plus 7. So it wasn't like it was, I mean, and the state makes more than 100 million, between 100 and 200 million a year. And we have a massive, the state has a massive surplus of weed. Actually, they're trying to sell back. If I go to a store right now, I'm getting weed that was harvested sometime in the middle of 2023. Almost said the wrong number. Sometime in 2023, and it's, you know, because there's a huge surplus. I mean, the notion that you have to go, we have to keep these prices and do all this to protect the little businesses coming in. No. You're only protecting the illegal, the unregulated market, because why would people go to why would you go to one of these stupid stores to buy this mediocre stuff at such high prices when you probably got somebody down the street who's doing a much better deal? And that's, I mean, and you know that guy. So,
And our taxes weren't bad. Our taxes are not bad in New Jersey. I mean, we got the message that the high tax didn't work, but the large corporations filled in that gap with more profits. So our tax rate is 10%. I mean, it was never very high. But when you're already buying a $70 quarter shake, another $7 on top of it does not feel like a very good deal. And I have to say, like, $77 for a quarter of like trim shake is really somebody said to me the other day, they're like, Chris, like, people in New Jersey aren't even going to know what good weed is anymore if they can't afford to buy it. I mean, I have watched people walk out of dispensaries, and I have watched people walk in and out. I've watched people walk in and out of, you know, New Jersey Weed Man has a place that is not he's going for regulated, but it operates anyway. And I've seen people walk out of there on the price. Look, I understand that New Jersey is generally an expensive place for some things, but the other aspect that we've seen is that large corporations mine what I call the bubble of the $60 eighth, right? So Trulieve has pulled out of Massachusetts. Curaleaf is out of California. These companies have made conscious moves to depart states at the point where they can't mine that first mover $60 eighth anymore. Once they're done, they're done. And that's what I'm trying to point out to legislators and unions and things like that. These companies have a short-term business plan, and they are willing and have demonstrated their ability to leave an entire state at the drop of a hat. That means hundreds, potentially thousands of employees, multiple facilities. They just get up and they go. So in Trulieve's case, they had an employee die at a facility. And they decided they didn't want to go through that investigation, and the price was going down. So they exited Massachusetts. Curaleaf exited the adult use market in Maine recently and stayed in the medical side, you know, to control some operations up there. But look, these companies clearly have a model that is not something that is a long-term. And they are building up an infrastructure. I keep telling the union guys, get ready. You guys could be employee-owned shops tomorrow. They could get out of here. Get ready to take it over, man. Be a local union-owned shop instead. But the idea that these companies get to come in and corrupt the politics and mine the bubble and then just leave, I think we have to open our eyes to their business model and how toxic it is. I don't think that state legislators should be working as partners with them as much as they are.
How do people, you're doing a lot of great work. So now, I remember one of the images I had when you were talking about the difference between New Jersey and Pennsylvania was sort of the reverse, right? Because Washington crossed the Delaware to get into Trenton. So this would be Washington crossing into Pennsylvania so that he'd get cheaper weed because his hemp crop down in Mount Vernon wasn't doing so well. He needed some starts. And so, you know, you got to get some fresh stuff. And he's not a stupid man. He'd want to pay less. But that's me just being silly at the moment. You are following a lot of this stuff, and it has been good talking with you, and it has been a bit of nostalgia back and, you know, talking to somebody who's actually fighting for weed legalization in places where it's an uphill battle. Anyway, so how do people follow the stuff that you're doing? How do people follow the stuff you're doing? Your social media? Do you have a website? That kind of thing. How do people keep up with you?
Sure. I'm most consistent up at Twitter. I still use Twitter and call it Twitter, even though everybody calls it X now. And my handle up there is Freedom is Green. And if you search my name, you'll probably find my Twitter account. I also use Instagram. I'm Chris Goldstein 420 up there on Instagram. And those are social medias. I write in a lot of places. So you can check out Heady, New Jersey. I'm a guest columnist there. I'm also a guest columnist sometimes at Insider New Jersey. And I write op-eds all over the region. So I have a couple coming out here in the next few weeks about my 420 and 418 experience. So we'll see. I have some grassroots views on federal reform that are coming up soon, but the best way to find me is on social there, Twitter and Instagram.
And any closing thoughts for the listener?
We're not done yet. And as much as we enjoy cannabis, sort of the greatest thing I've learned about it is that cannabis, like John Sinclair, who we recently lost, one of my great inspirations and an amazing activist out of Michigan, he used to say, we have to find out what the political impact of consuming cannabis is, of smoking marijuana. What's the political impact on somebody who smokes marijuana in the country? And I think that is one of the most interesting questions that we're still trying to figure out. So closing thoughts are, we know a lot about the science. We know a lot about the highs and how to smoke it. But the biggest question of this important election year is, how are we impacted? How does cannabis impact American politics? And we're about, I think, to find that out in a big way for the first time in 2020.
That was my conversation with the writer, activist, and regional normal organizer, Chris Goldstein. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh.
Hey, Congress, get going to deal with it, and particularly to not just reschedule, but deschedule.
Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.